Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports on this Wednesday, July the 20th, 2022, here on Global Patriot Radio. We can be found, of course, at blogtalkradio.com. Every Wednesday, that's my new phone. Sorry, I get these alerts and whatnot. My new phone is, I'm really proud of it because it's, it's not the best or anything, but it's a step up from what I'm used to getting. I usually get like pretty much bottom of the barrel type stuff. This time I got, I got a $450 phone here. So yeah, you heard that go off in the background. Anyway, it's Wednesday, July 20th, 2022, and you are here listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports on Global Patriot Radio, where 7 days a week, 7 shows a week. Yes, sir, and ma'am. Mondays, of course, 6 o'clock Eastern Time, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al. Big Al, by the way, has been tweeting up some good stuff lately. If you see Global Patriot Radio on Twitter, that's Big Al. Sometimes that might be Vito, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure it's just Al. And then Vito, of course, is Mamma Mia No Sharita, and shows up as Vito Esposito. And they're on every Monday night at 6 o'clock Eastern. Tuesdays at 6 o'clock Eastern, Eric with the Cross and Crescent discussion. Then, of course, Wednesdays at 5:30 Eastern time, me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Poly Sports. Thursdays at 6 o'clock Eastern, in comes Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Then Fridays, usually around noon, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. Saturday night's main event, 10 p.m. Eastern time until midnight. Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christy, of course, bringing you Revealing the Truth About Islam. And maybe it'd be better to say hitting you between the eyes with it, because they pull no punches. Sundays, Eric is back, 3 p.m. Eastern, with Real Interfaith Dialogue, which is a continuation of his Cross and Crescent discussion. That's what happens on Global Patriot Radio. Elsewhere on Blog Talk Radio, you can catch Airwaves America, the Dave and G-Ski Rocks show, Joseph Gibson with Understanding the Times in Which We Live, Annie with Southern Sense Radio, Tim Tapp with Tap Into Truth. Best way to do that, I'll be honest, you can try and remember, but I usually don't. Follow the show. Just go to whatever show and follow it. Now, if you follow any of our shows, you'll follow our whole network. But if you follow a show, you'll get an email, assuming you log in, and, you get a nice reminder. I am here, as always, in Electric Hank Land with my little Aussie. My wife is working hard at work in the other room in Acoustic Hank Land. I just learned something about my little Aussie today. I was hanging out in my room before the show, just watching a little Hulu, and she heard a couple little thunderclaps outside. I think she can open the door to my room. I think the certain doors in our house she can open. We didn't teach her. We didn't do any of that. She just does it. It's fun to have an active, smart dog. It's also can come back to haunt you, to bite you. No two ways about it. Hey, several ways to interact with us, of course. You can come in via the website, blogtalkradio.com, and then find us under live. You can come into the chat room, and Indy Hawk KB is there right now, along with myself. You can call in on the phones, 319-527-6706, as Sue from New Mexico has done, and my big sister. You can do that. You can listen that way. You can also talk that way if you want. You hit the one on your phone, and I get this little – it used to be like a question icon. Now it's like a hand raise. It's kind of cool. It's like a long hand, though. It's like a really long arm and hand holding up. You can do that. You can email me anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. If you go to Twitter and go to @hpolysports, you'll get me. You can talk at me or talk to me. I'm on Facebook, Hank Jones Poly Sports. I'm rarely on Facebook. I mean, I'm there, like I say, I go there, sort of check out stuff, but mainly, I admit it, I'm there every day to get my daily treat on Candy Crush. I'm stuck on a level right now, but it doesn't matter. I still go there and play. Hey, Alaskan has also joined Indie Hawk KB in the chat room, so you know the getting's good. It's going to be good stuff in there. Let's get to our obits. Last Wednesday, we lost Mark Fleischman at the age of 82. He's probably best known as a club owner. He was a one-time owner, believe it or not, of Studio 54. He bought it in 1981 from the original owners, Steve Rubell and Ian Schrager, the guys that turned it into guys that John Belushi spoofed on Saturday Night Live. He later owned a nightclub called Gauguin at the Plaza Hotel back when it was owned, obviously in pre-presidential days, by Donald J. Trump. He suffered from an undiagnosed medical condition. Since 2016, he was left unable to speak, and he was in a wheelchair. He passed by assisted suicide in Switzerland. That same day, we also lost former NFL running back, or a defensive back, Rashard Anderson. Unknown causes. He was age 45. He helped lead Jackson State to division and conference titles in the late 1990s, and he was drafted in the first round by the Carolina Panthers in 2000. Played two seasons in the NFL and a suspension for violating the league's substance abuse policy. He eventually returned, immediately cut by the Panthers, later cut by the CFL Calgary Stampeders. Well, you know, I should get that song. Remember that song, Sweet City Woman? It was done by a group called the Stampeders, who were out of Calgary. Anyway, Rashard Anderson retired from football, became a substitute teacher near his hometown of Mississippi. Another loss. This is a real sad one. Oregon Ducks tight end Spencer Webb passed away at age 22. He died after striking his head in a recreational accident near Triangle Lake, popular location for cliff jumping and natural rock water slides. Evidently bystanders and then responding paramedics were unable to revive him after the fall. Man, that is a tough, tough loss for a college football program. It does happen to schools and programs on occasion, but when it happens right before summer camp starts, that's terrible. And Thursday came word that Ivana Trump, the first wife of President Trump, passed away at age 73. According to the medical examiner, she died as a result of blunt trauma injuries suffered in a fall. At the time, they said it was an accident and not suspicious. She apparently fell downstairs in her New York apartment, and then Manhattan paramedics, responding to a call for cardiac arrest, were unable to revive her. Yeah, I know their divorce was a bit contentious, at least in the tabloids. I kind of always viewed her as a class lady. Actually, much like Melania, believe it or not, just a class act. You know, didn't go out into the tabloids and seek to do all kinds of damage. I mean, yeah, she may have said things in interviews. What ex wouldn't, I guess, in those social circles? But no, she did not go out and sell herself out, so to speak. She was born Ivana Zelnikova. She was raised in Czechoslovakia, became a model and a snow skier, and then she eventually met and married Donald Trump. They had three kids, Donald Jr., Ivanka, and Eric. She leaves them behind, as well as 10 grandchildren, and her mother, Marie Zelnikova. Now, according to Business Insider, I know, take it for what it's worth, but according to Business Insider, there is an investigation taking place. So, you know, who knows? Who knows what they're going to come of that? This next one, get this song on. We lost William Hart. Now, the name itself may not, you know, mean much, but William Hart was a member of the Delphonics. And he was a songwriter, singer-songwriter. He wrote this song. This is one of the awesome songs he wrote. He was 77 years old, no cause listed. This is La La Means I Love You. You'll know it. Just give it a listen.
Many guys have come to you with a line that wasn't true, and you passed them by. Now you're in the winner's ring,
He's grooving. Anyway, that's the original version of the song. Michael Jackson or the Jackson 5 later did it. It wasn't bad, but, you know, it's never as good as the original. Or usually not as good as the original, usually. So William Hart dead at 77. And then this next one, we lost the bassist that gave us the awesome bass work on this song. This one's a little louder, but this was one of my jam songs when I helped out at this wine shop back in the early 90s. Just jammed. Listen to this bass line. Now listen to this bass. Suddenly, no cause yet listed. He also wrote music for movie and TVs, which, you know, could mean anything these days because it doesn't necessarily mean that he was working it. As one of my sisters listening in, her daughter was in music for a while and pointed out at the time how so much of that is done by computer now. It's movie scoring and everything, so it's just not the same. Anyway, Paul Reider, suddenly dead at age 58. He also toured with Tom Tom Club. Tom Tom Club is a group fronted by Tina Wyman of the Talking Heads, which the irony here is that she is the bassist for Talking Heads. But yeah, he toured with them as well. Look, it's not a lot. They didn't do Happy Mondays didn't do a lot. This is actually a cover of a song from 1971 by John Congos. Great song, though. Great song. And, you just don't hear hard-working bass like this much anymore. He was getting after it, no doubt about it. That song actually, John Congos' version actually only hit number 70 in the U.S. It hit number 4 in the U.K. And so, yeah, it hitting number 70, it didn't get on Casey Kasem's American Top 40. You want to know what's really more shocking? Happy Monday's version only got to number 57. So they didn't get onto Casey's show either. You know that? And now, this group from South Africa, Casey Kasem, of course, he went on to do Shaggy. So, dude is forever in my Hall of Fame. Saturday, we lost Mickey Rooney Jr. He died at his home 2 weeks after his 77th birthday. Now, wait a second here. Isn't it about like 6 weeks? Okay, it was longer than that. It was 8 years ago. But it wasn't that long ago we lost his dad, Mickey Rooney. Man. The son had some movie credits to his name. He was married to a former Playboy bunny and centerfold. Obviously didn't reach the same heights his father did. Oh, wait. His dad was short. Like Robert Reich short. So maybe. Anyway, also that day, last Saturday, we lost attorney Gerald Schargel at age 77 to complications of Alzheimer's disease. Now, Gerald Schargel was a part of the law firm Cutler & Schargel. Some of his notable clients included Amanda Bynes, Daniel Pelosi, no relation to the famous drinking Pelosi's. Also two clients, Gambino family leaders, John Gotti Jr., and underboss Sammy Gravano. Yeah, he was actually disqualified from the last Gotti-Gravano trial, both he and Bruce Cutler, when prosecuting attorneys were actually able to establish that Schargel and Cutler were de facto in-house counsel for the Gambino family, thus giving them knowledge of actual criminal activity, which could potentially leave them as witnesses. Yeah, Gotti ended up hiring sort of a famous mob lawyer, Albert Krieger. Albert Krieger was unlike Cutler and Chargal, Albert Krieger was, he represented mobsters, but he was a legit lawyer. He understood that they had a right to a defense, but he was not proving of the mob lifestyle. Gravano, of course, flipped and entered the witness protection program. Jerry Chargal actually retired in 2018. I'll tell you what, as a mob lawyer slash groupie, like I said, there's a distinction between scumbag lawyers like Cutler and Chargal versus upstanding legit guys like Albert Krieger. But to the mob, being afflicted with Alzheimer's does not bode well for someone. Now, that's why it's kind of almost shocking that Dopey Joe still has his position as front boss in La Dopey Nostra, if you get what I'm saying. On that day, we also lost a true ally, actually, climatologist Patrick Michaels at age 72. Now, he often debunked the climate change hoax. While he said there's been an increase in the Earth's global mean temperature, he says it's hardly significant. And let's remember, Earth is still really emerging from an ice age. He also noted that an increase, a moderate or a small increase, could be beneficial to Earth. In other words, he is what big media calls a climate denier. Then again, anyone who scoffs at the absolute utter ridiculousness of things like the Green New Deal cannot, by big media and big left, be acknowledged as rational, reasonable, sane, etc. Anyway, RIP Patrick Michaels, because it, you know, it takes guts to stand up at a national level. One of the founders of the Weather Channel was a guy named John Coleman, who used to be on local weather guy in Chicago, and he, you know, in his latter years, absolutely was flabbergasted at what Weather Channel had become. Jim Cantore accepted, of course. Jim Cantore's always cool. But, you know, they talked about, John Coleman talked about, he's climate, this whole climate change thing, it's meaningless. He goes, we've been undergoing this since the dawn of time. Yesterday we lost a former NFL and actually Colorado Buffalo wide receiver Charles Johnson. No cause yet. He was only 50. He was part of the early 1990s Colorado teams that kind of figured into the national title picture at various junctures. Spent 9 years in the NFL, drafted in the first round by the Steelers in 1994, 17th pick. Finished his career pretty respectable, 4,600 plus yards and 24 touchdowns. Went into coaching after he retired. Here's a little internet laughy from the Babylon Bee. This one's actually pretty good. Shocking photos show Hunter Biden fully clothed and not smoking crack. For those that don't know, the Babylon Bee is a satirical newspaper that makes fun of most things liberal. Here's our quickies this week. Hey, is everyone taking advantage of the Putin price drop at the gas pumps? Yeah, me neither. What with eggs more than doubling over the past year, not to mention recent increases in the price of other parts of chicken besides the wings. Remember, wings were already fetching like lobster prices in some places. Another quickie, AOC got arrested and led away in handcuffs. Actually, she didn't, which is why I'm going to rant about it a little bit later in the program. Retired Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer didn't stay retired very long. He has taken a professorship at Harvard Law School. Wonder if it's for life. Ah, Vito's in the chat room. Welcome, Vito, and also Banjo80 in the chat room, along with Indy Hawk and the Alaskan. Big Sister and Sue from New Mexico are on the phones. Anyone wants to join in? Senator Raphael Warnock, Democrat senator from Georgia, is accused of using federal campaign funds to pay for legal expenses in a lawsuit that goes back a decade and a half at least. In other words, it had nothing to do with his candidacy or his campaign. We will see where it goes, of course. There was a shooting on the set of Law and Order Organized Crime. Has more questions than answers at this point. First, to clarify, Alec Baldwin was not involved. But as of noon yesterday, police and NBC Universal, the parent network of the show, they still weren't clear if the set was operational at the time of the shooting. There are no suspects, and there are no known motives. All that's known is that 31-year-old Johnny Pizarro, who works parking enforcement for the show, was shot around 5:15 a.m., taken to a nearby hospital, and pronounced dead around 6 a.m. New York Police Department, being handcuffed as they are by that city's administration, they really have a better shot at solving the JFK mystery, really, most likely. I mean, given what's happening in our police departments around the country. I am declaring this a Griner-free Wednesday. I know Al tweeted about Brittany Griner several times today. I am not discussing her. However, we do have a trans story after a trans prisoner had to be transferred to a men's facility, impregnating two women inmates. Like I often say, you cannot make this stuff up. And to prove I'm not, AmericanBriefing.com had the story. Trans prisoner who impregnated two inmates finally transferred to men's facility. The 27-year-old inmate has been moved out of the only women's prison in New Jersey just 1 year after the state settled with the ACLU to house transgender inmates according to their identity instead of their sex. Really? Demi Minor has been moved to the vulnerable housing unit at the Garden State Youth Correctional Facility, a prison for young adults age 18 to 30. Confirmed three trans women housed in the youth facility's vulnerable housing unit, although the prison's general population houses only men. Decisions related to an incarcerated person's housing are made within the parameters of the settlement agreement. Yeah. Anyway, Minor is serving a 30-year prison sentence for manslaughter, impregnated the fellow inmates earlier this year following consensual sexual relationships. He added that even consensual sex between inmates is prohibited in the state. Yeah, I had to add that. Had to clarify with that one. And according to a story from Newsmax, Stacey Abrams has raised nearly $50 million in the race for Georgia governor. The sad part, only 14% of it has come from Georgia. Well, then again, down in Florida, Stephanie Murphy is saying, hold my beer. If she could have gotten 14% from Florida, she'd probably still be running for re-election this year, just saying. Yeah, questions abounding in the Vito's asking, am I sure the trans isn't pregnant? I don't know. Boyd, the Alaskan, is asking, is this a birthing person maker? I do not know. Once you'd make that first and second twist, I have no clue how you refer to them. I don't know the pronouns, prenouns, whatever. I just don't know. I don't even know where to go with a story like that. I mean, you know, you have the ones that get pregnant and then identify as male and say they're pregnant males. Okay, that's the mental disease that Steve Dace talked about before. But when you're identifying as a female, but you're really a male and you're raping prisoners and or having consensual sex and getting pregnant, you're not a trans female. You're just a guy. You're just a guy living in a woman's prison. I mean, here's how sick it gets. You know, we think like that guy in the Dopey Joe, you know, in the La Dopey Nostra, Rachel Levine, who, you know, I've seen the pictures of Rachel Levine. I've never heard Rachel Levine talk. Finally hearing Rachel Levine talk, Rachel Levine's voice is lower than mine. I mean, it's literally a guy just putting on the wig. So I'm wondering, you know, if it's going that far, do you even have to put on the wig and the dress to go to a female prison anymore? I mean, I don't know. I mean, now that I've satisfied my moving violation in my home state of Florida a couple weeks ago, I'll never get a chance to find out. And I got excused from jury duty, so I'm going to have to really commit a crime if I'm going to try and find this. And I'm just the guy to go undercover and do this. Oh, Vito, we will not repeat that. Okay, so a guy who called the office of Texas U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, as well as other Republicans, and made overt threats to assassinate him is free and on the run. Yeah, you heard me right. Isaac A. Formangum, called Senator Cruz's office on June 26th with a serious threat to kill Ted Cruz, as well as like-minded colleagues. Here's a part of the story. I will read some of the dialogue, if you will. It must have been like a voicemail or something. It said, "Hello and good afternoon, Senator Raphael. This is one of the many Afro-American constituents of whom you are representative of here in Texas, as you currently serve from the Senate. I have just read the Texas Republican Party's platform for this current 2022 year, wherein it is apparent that your many colleagues intend to have the Voting Rights Act repealed and not reauthorized. Every last one of your Republican colleagues to have signed off on that platform is to be found and is to be found and killed, be it by a bullet to the face or by the smashing of a brick in your skull." So, what happened? Well, Isaac A. Formangum was booked into the Harris County Jail July 2nd. County officials released him and gave him a court date. He, of course, did not show up for his hearing. Now, here's where it gets interesting. After Harris County Democrats swept elections for judicial posts, liberal judges have been releasing many criminals on bonds. Harris County District Attorney Kim Ogg was elected with the support of liberal billionaire George Soros. It's unknown if Formangum's release was ordered by an unknown judge or by prosecutors. Doesn't that just make you misty? Our system at work. Meanwhile, up in Washington State, kind of a different story. And I'll let you guess why. Armed man arrested after allegedly threatening to kill Congresswoman. Representative Pramila Jayapal, Democrat, Washington, called the police Saturday night when an armed man allegedly threatened to kill the Congresswoman while standing outside her home. Officers arrived shortly to find a 48-year-old man armed with a .40-caliber handgun standing, quote, in the middle of the street. So, he lives within a half mile. A judge denied. He ordered the man to remain jailed in lieu of bond, but denied prosecutors' request for an anti-harassment order. Really? Look, I'm not saying that this guy's getting the harsh treatment. I am saying that in the case of a Democrat congresswoman, this guy's getting no bail. When it comes to, in a Democrat county, a Republican senator, sign your name here and come back. If it were reversed, if it were a Republican, one of the few Republicans in Washington State, and it were a Democrat, I'll bet it would be getting the Cruz treatment. But even to that end, the judge denied prosecutors' request for an anti-harassment order protecting Congressman Jayapal? Really? I would think that would just be like standard. Like that would just be right there with the rubber stamp. Boyd asks a good question. Do trans have male pattern baldness? I don't know. Vito points out they're just being good, violent Democrats. He's right. We're just letting them be peaceful. So Dopey Joe made one of the stupidest tweets of all time just a little over a week ago. The message, if you remember, was that gas station operators are the reason for the high gas prices. But one major media outlet, you can bet it wasn't from big media, it was the Wall Street Journal. But here's what they said. It wasn't just a matter of, it's not a function of this. They said when wholesale prices go up, gas station owners tend to raise the price at the pump slowly so as not to discourage customers from stepping inside their convenience store. In other words, it's rarely about gas prices at those places. It's about getting them into the stores. So here are the costs that Mr. Biden apparently unaware of. They have to face a factor in credit card transaction fees. They have to face a fixed commission of 6 cents a gallon as part of contracts with fuel distributors. And what if credit card fees have increased upward to 10 cents a gallon? In other words, there are no profit margins for gas station owners. But yeah, let's rip into them. By the way, like I said, everybody taking advantage of the Putin price drop? If it was the Putin price increase, it is the Putin price drop. Al asked something last week, I think by email. Is the Ghislaine Maxwell death watch officially on? Well, we'll see. Patriot Nation thinks so. According to lawyers for convicted sex trafficker Ghislaine Maxwell, he's made several claims of being offered money to kill her. That's weird. They claimed that one of the female inmates and three other inmates had been offered money to murder Ms. Maxwell and planned to strangle her while she was asleep. Yeah, I'd say it's on. I'd say the Ghislaine Maxwell death watch is on. I don't have a website up yet, and I wouldn't post a calendar with it if I did, but yeah, I'd say, you know, that she's lasted longer than Epstein at this point is kind of a remarkable, well, it's a testament to the fact that female prisons aren't as violent maybe as male prisons. And evidently the guards at female prisons are able to stay awake and the cameras work better. I don't even want to think about that last statement. Sorry. Dopey Joe also lashed out at reporters for asking him about that New York Times poll and the idea of several Dems opposed to him running again. I'm going to touch on it later, but he literally, when they show him, he literally just looks. I mean, he just looks so off. Here's what he said. Mr. President, what's your message to Democrats who don't want you to run again? They want me to run. Read the polls. Read the polls, Jack. You guys are all the same. Dopey Joe. Dopey Joe. OPEC is suddenly on the docket, produce an extra 1 million barrels of oil per day in 2023. Why didn't we ask American energy companies to do that? Now, you've seen the memes, I assume, the photoshopping of Dopey Joe standing next to the crown prince or whatever he is of Saudi Arabia, the grand poobah. I forgot their rankings over there. They said OPEC says they expect to output by 1 million barrels a day. Now, we'll see, and we'll see who we're competing for it with. I'm not sure how we can afford to buy it anyway, given that we've taken up so much of our strategic petroleum reserves and sold it overseas. I just don't get it. It's supposed to world oil demand by next year increase by about 2.7 million barrels per day, with overall demand projected to reach 103 million barrels per day. So if they're doing a million barrels per day, it's a 1% increase. If that, not quite. It says non-OPEC supply is expected to increase by 1.76 million barrels per day in 2023. So here's the problem. We're going around asking other countries, other people, other organizations to increase their output. And we are literally hamstringing our own domestic energy production. And before people say, oh, you know, they did sign off on some leases, no idiots sitting on their board is going to invest all kinds of money in domestic energy production with the hamstringing. I mean, it's just, it's insane that we even pretend to think that, I mean, I don't know. Well, Disney is still woke. Here's how far it really went, though. Okay, so conservative Disney producer broke his silence about it. He It started where the Disney management public battle with Governor DeSantis over the parental rights and education law, which they kept calling the Don't Say Gay bill. Anyway, videos from company meetings leaked showed company leaders bragging about Disney's, quote, not at all secret gay agenda and its move to create canonical trans characters in children's programming. In April, we learned, of course, that they kicked up their activism, offering a new benefit that will assist employees and their minor children with gender affirmation procedures. Seriously. And then following Roe versus Wade reversal by the Supreme Court, the company immediately assured employees that regardless of where they live, they will be reimbursed for the cost of travel to the nearest state that allows abortion. So it says, what a great work environment for a liberal employee. Here's the problem. What if you're conservative? So Jeremiah Dawes was a content producer. Shortly after his arrival, he basically, in Hollywood, he kept his views to himself. He and his brother in the late 2000s signed up for a screenwriting workshop. And he said he noticed, the man who ran it, noticed some conservative posts on his social media, invited him to breakfast and let him know they would be blacklisted in Hollywood if people knew he held those beliefs. He went to work for Disney in 2015. And he got along fine until the summer of 2020. In reaction to the George Floyd riots, they began sending employees to mandatory diversity and inclusion training sessions. And Dawes said that was the last straw. He was told that as a white straight male, he should be quiet and listen, and that promotions would be on hold for the white men on the team. He was also instructed to start casting non-binary children for photo and video shoots. I mean, can you believe that? So yeah, he quit. Gee, I can't imagine why. Yeah, that's Disney for you, folks. I mean, look, with having raised a child in Florida, I went to Disney a lot. And there's still a lot of good stuff about Disney. Ah, Banjo 80 points out, Dick's Sporting Goods apparently will now pay for employees for out-of-state abortions, too. And since they don't sell guns, it's not like they can protect themselves on their way there. At Dick's Sporting, I mean, I'm all for companies wanting to do what they want, but I'm also, I've said before, I'm never one normally to call for boycotts, but at a certain point, you just have to get the word out. I mean, don't buy from these people, because what your money buys is liberal ideology. So Cassidy Hutchinson, she's the one from the January 6th kangaroo court who was thoroughly embarrassed after testifying. Anyway, there was an email obtained from the Daily Caller or by the Daily Caller. She was asking for financial assistance from former Trump officials, but she was rejected by at least one. She later testified, of course, in an email sent to a former Trump official in early February, said she was having trouble affording a legal team and asked to be put in contact with fundraising organizations or attorneys that could assist her. She said she was subpoenaed by the January 6th kangaroo court on November 9th, 2020, but she meant 2021. She was not formally served until January 26th, 2022. She's had difficulty securing a legal team and was hoping you might be able to put her in contact with any fundraising organizations and or attorneys that are involved. Separate email told of her family's financial woes. My aunt and uncle applied to refinance their house to loosen up some money since I don't have much immediate family, but they weren't approved. Well, sources confirmed that her former boss, Mark Meadows, would not reply, as he did not want to appear to be improperly influencing her testimony. So yeah, she reached out to various people, ask for financial assistance and help finding a lawyer. But guess what? We're finding out that some of these people are testifying and getting pats on the back from Liz Cheney, who knows what else. It's being implied that some of these people are being rewarded for their testimony. Now, supposedly Trump's PAC eventually agreed to help her financially and recommend attorneys. So who knows? But yeah, her motive, obviously not pure. Every conversation that she described that she had with people from McCarthy to Ratcliffe to Cipollone never happened. Yeah, remember that bombshell testimony? Never happened. Anyone shocked? Yeah, me neither. Meanwhile, disgraced former Democrat Representative Katie Hill. Remember, she was the one who had an inappropriate relationship with a staffer. Turns out that she might have been lesbian, and her husband divorced her. That's fine, whatever, I don't care. But she admitted to an inappropriate relationship. Now she has filed bankruptcy. The cause is a report, according to this, is a mountain of legal bills from a failed lawsuit she filed against the Daily Mail and two journalists for publishing revealing photos of her. The suit was dismissed on free speech grounds, and she is left with around $200,000 in legal and attorney's fees. And I do not know why my phone, I've got my phone on vibrate, but it's still giving me these alerts and stuff. I apologize. I may just have to, no, I can't turn it all the way off. I'll just have to change my notifications. It's a little, comes down to that. So yeah, Katie Hill, victims of cyber exploitation are being let down by our legal system. Well, really, no. No. I mean, you got called out. Really nothing more than that. I'm not sure why that constitutes, you know, whatever. But she's filed bankruptcy. I'm surprised Soros hasn't bailed her out. Now, here's another internet laughy from the Babylon Bee. White House still searching for a Biden they can send out in public. Yeah. As we noted last week on our previous show, this past weekend was the British Open, which began with a little drama after the Royal and Ancient, the group who runs the tournament, did not invite past champion Greg Norman, who also happens to be the head of the LIV Tour, the new Saudi-backed tour competing with the PGA. Vito was on the show a few weeks ago talking about this. Anyway, moving into the weekend, several LIV Tour golfers were in contention. Dustin Johnson entered the weekend at 9-under. Others, Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter, Sergio Garcia, Bryson DeChambeau, and Taylor Gooch also in the hunt. Breakaway LIV leader, I put that in quotes, Phil Mickelson, a.k.a. Lefty. He sat at even after the first day. He did not make the cut. But he was gracious in his response to Tiger Woods' comments earlier in the week. Remember, Mickelson noted that the LIV Tour breakaway has incited a range of emotions and feelings, and that in the end, he respects Tiger's opinion that the breakaway players turned their backs on the PGA. He also noted that the RNA contacted him a few weeks ago and told him it probably wasn't a great idea for him to attend pre-event celebrations and past champions' events, but that he was welcome to do so. Admit it or not, I think it's a class move on his part, knowing that, you know, attending could create so much conflict. I can't say that Tiger or many other players would do the same thing. Not a knock on them, really. I'm just saying Phil took the high road. Fellow breakaway Ian Poulter said that by and large, things between him and the PGA players were fine. No animosity, no confrontation. Phil Mickelson noted that at this point in his career, the LIV Tour was the right move for him. Allows him to still play competitive golf while allowing more free time for other things. I can't argue with that. I mean, as someone who, you know, I sold my former company partly in that vein. I had no more time to do anything. other than that. I mean, when something consumes you, you tend to miss out on the simple things, basic things. So, yeah, I'm fully of the mind we shouldn't live like that. As for the tournament, Australian Cameron Smith shot a final round 64 to overtake third-round leaders Rory McIlroy, who was obviously the crowd favorite, and Victor Hovland. Smith won with a 20-under 268, a shot ahead of American Cameron Young, two ahead of McIlroy. Live Tour golfers fared okay, not great. Dustin Johnson and Bryson DeChambeau both cracked the top 10. Now, on a side note, NBC golf announcer David Faherty is apparently leaving that network's announced team to join the Live Tour as well. That's kind of interesting, if you ask me. Last week, Jim Thorpe. Okay, Vito, I know, he's saying Phil can't win on the PGA Tour, but I'm saying he can still play competitive golf on the Live Tour. Last week, anyway, Jim Thorpe, one of the greatest all-around athletes who ever lived to this day, even over 100 years after his heyday, had his gold medal wins in the 1912 Olympic decathlon and pentathlon restored by the International Olympic Committee. Restored as the sole winner. Thorpe, he was the AP's athlete of the half century. He died in 1953. He lost his amateur status by the AAU in 1913 because it was discovered he had played semi-pro baseball in 1909-1910 for anywhere from $2 a game to $35 a week. The International Olympic Committee followed suit and disqualified his wins and took back his medals. Now, in 1982, after pressure from a lot of sports historians and Native American advocacy groups, Jim Thorpe was a member of the Sac and Fox Nation. He was partially restored. His titles were shared with the runner-up silver medalists. But last Thursday, the International Olympic Committee made it official. Jim Thorpe is the gold medalist and sole winner of each event. Now, he went on to play pro baseball with the New York Giants, the Cincinnati Reds, and the Boston Braves, and then he returned to football with the Canton Bulldogs, ended up playing for six NFL teams. He was named to the NFL's first all-decade team in 1931. He retired from professional football in 1928 at age 41. He's also a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It was always understood that football was his favorite sport. He actually didn't even compete in track and field at his college, Carlisle Indian Industrial School, in those two seasons prior to the Olympics. In that Olympics, 1912 Olympics in Stockholm, he not only won the two multi-event disciplines, the pentathlon and the decathlon, he also finished in a tie for fourth in the open high jump, seventh in the long jump. As a running back, defensive back, place kicker, and punter, he excelled, scoring all of his team's points in an 18-15 upset of Harvard, who was a national power back then, back in 1911. In a 1912 game against Army, he had a 92-yard rushing touchdown called back by a penalty. And then on the next play, he ran for a 97-yard touchdown. Yeah, he was an All-American in both 1911 and 1912. Carlisle was declared national champion in 1912 by several writers when they went 12-1-1, and then they were also by a few writers in 1911 when they went 11-1. So, yeah, justice finally served, albeit way too late. It comes 110 years after his victories and 69 years after his death, which came in two months shy of his 66th birthday. I mean, it's anticlimactic in the sense that people knew Jim Thorpe was the real champion and by far the greatest all-around athlete of his day. It's unfortunate, though, it took bureaucrat types this long to officially acknowledge it. I mean, it's a joke. Botswana Olympic men's 800-meter silver medalist Nigel Amos has been provisionally suspended from the World Championships, World Track and Field Championships that began last Friday. in Eugene, Oregon. By the way, it's the first time that they have been held on American soil. Anyway, Nigel Amos was notified of a positive doping test by the Athletics Integrity Unit, or Integrity Union. He was scheduled to start today in the 800-meter heats. Those go off later today, so we'll see. He was the Botswana's first Olympic medalist, Tokyo Games, which, of course, took place in 2021. Elsewhere at this week's track and field championships, Burundi woman's 5,000-meter specialist Francine Nyanzaba withdrew with a stress fracture. Conveniently, South African quasi-woman Caster Semenya will compete now in the 5,000, despite not having a qualifying time. Now, remember, several other top runners have dropped out. That allows her entry. She's the, I guess you'd say, controversial two-time Olympic gold medalist in the 800 meters. She is barred now from competing in events from 400 to 1500 based on gender anomalies. Okay, I'll explain that. Although she was born primarily female, yes, heavy air quote use there. There are also male gender characteristics present, whatever the hell that means. I really have no interest in knowing specifics. Look, looking at her is enough to know that things are a bit off in that regard. I'm just saying. Other notables, Allison Felix competing in her final world stage event, competing in the mixed relay. She failed to make the women's team in her individual events, the 400 or the 200 meters, but she was added to the mixed relay squad. The women's 400 meters hurdles is going to be a barn burner. You got U.S. gold and silver medalist Sydney McLaughlin and Dalila Mohammed. McLaughlin is the world record holder. Mohammed is a former world record holder. Another barn burner could be the men's 400-meter hurdles. World record holder Carsten Warholm, who also won the Olympic gold. He's won the last two worlds as well, but he's been running with a hamstring injury. Ray Benjamin took the silver in Tokyo, holds the American record. He's also a favorite. Oh, and to add some politics to it, make it a true poly sports item, Cuban javelin thrower defected to the U.S. She abandoned her team after they landed in Miami. Iselena Bayar Rojas won bronze at the Under-20 World Cup in Kenya last year. So the event began last week. I'll give you some of the results. The U.S. mixed relay team, which I said included Allison Felix, they finished third behind the Dominican Republic and the Netherlands. The U.S. was shut out of a medal in the men's long jump, but swept the men's 100. Yeah, Fred Curley, who actually came up as a 400-meter guy, he won the gold in 9.86. Marvin Bracey and Trayvon Bromell took silver and bronze in 9.88, like 0.002 separated them. Defending world champion American Christian Coleman missed the Olympics last year due to missed drug tests. He finished sixth in 10.01. Yeah, three championships ago, 10.01 would have been in the medal. The marathon Ethiopians took gold and silver. Bronze went to a Belgian. Here's the surprise, though. The top American finisher, Galen Rupp, he's normally a 5K and 10K runner. He only finished 19th, 3 minutes out of medal contention. You'd think on our home turf, you know. In somewhat of an upset, Chase Ealy won the women's shot put, won gold there. So that's, yeah, definitely somewhat of an upset. You don't think of Americans doing well in those events. In the men's 400, American Randolph Ross, he's the NCAA champ out of North Carolina A&T. He was disqualified over missed drug test issues. American's men didn't medal in the 10,000 meter, but Grant Fisher finished fourth place, just 17 hundredths off the bronze. That's huge, too. I mean, the U.S. has not fared historically well in the longer distances, at least on a consistent basis. Kind of expected. American men dominated the shot put. Olympic champ, world record holder Ryan Krauser set a championship record through 75 feet 3 inches. Silver medalist Joe Kovach also hit 75 feet. Bronze medalist Josh Awatunde hit 73 feet. Again, those are, you know, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have had three guys over 70. You wouldn't have had three guys over 70 feet, probably. The men's 100-meter high hurdles, 110-meter high hurdles, Grant Holloway and Trey Cunningham went 1-2, while Devin Allen, guy that was drafted in the NFL draft, had the fastest time in the world this year. He was disqualified. Jamaican women swept the 100 meters, the women's 100. Blistering times, too. I mean, all smoking times. American men were shut out of the high jump and the 3,000-meter steeplechase. American women were shut out of the 1,500. American Tori Franklin took bronze in the women's triple jump. Yesterday, American men were shut out of the 1,500, but in the 400-meter hurdles, it wasn't Karsten Warholm, but it also wasn't Ray Benjamin. Brazilian Ali dos Santos won in a championship record 46.29. Ray Benjamin, this poor guy, he's a perennial bridesmaid. Ray Benjamin took silver, 46.89. Trevor Bassett took bronze in 47.29. Yeah, the world record holder, Karsten Warholm, he's obviously still dealing with that hamstring injury. He finished seventh. He ran 48.42. And that right there tells you how much this event has evolved in recent years. Up until about 5 or 10 years ago, 48.42 is near or at the top. I mean, other than Edwin Moses back in the 80s, 90s, people didn't run under 48. Edwin Moses did, but rarely did anyone else. Now, Warholm's dropped it under 46. Big events today, semis in the women's 400 and 400-meter hurdles, and semis in the men's 400-meter flat. Heats begin in the 800. We'll see if Nigel Amos does indeed get to run. You can watch it, on the NBC networks, like their cable affiliates. If you're streaming, you can watch it on Peacock. You can only watch it live if you have a paid subscription on Peacock. Otherwise, you can watch it like on a delayed basis, which is pretty cool because you don't have to listen to all the lead up to it. In a shock of shocks, okay, not really, a New York judge has ruled that New York State's isolation and quarantine procedures, a.k.a. Rule 2.13, enacted in February of this year, are unconstitutional. Go figure. Go figure that somebody would. I mean, New York, nothing is safe there anymore. Okay, a New York Supreme Court judge ruled that regulations mandating that people infected with or exposed to highly contagious communicable diseases be quarantined are a violation of state law, declaring them null and void. Under the rule, quote, whenever appropriate to control the spread of a highly contagious communicable disease, the state commissioner of health may issue and or may direct the local health authority to issue isolation and or quarantine orders consistent with due process of law to all such persons as the state commissioner of health shall determine appropriate. Isolations may include those at home or in residential or temporary housing, subject to what the public health authority issuing the order determines is appropriate. However, the rule also notes that where symptoms or conditions indicate that medical care in a general hospital is expected to be required, the isolation location shall be a general hospital. Now, three Republican state legislators, God, I didn't even know New York had those, and I guess upstate, Senator George Borrello, Assemblyman Chris Taig, and Assemblyman Michael Lawler, along with Uniting New York State, filed a lawsuit against Democrat Governor Kathy Hochul and Commissioner of Health Mary Bassett, and then the state's Department of Health and the Public Health and Health Planning Council. Plaintiffs argued that the isolation and quarantine procedures were in violation of the New York State Constitution and a violation of the separation of powers. In a July 8th ruling, Acting Justice of the Supreme Court of Cattaraugus County, Ronald D. Pletz, sided with the plaintiffs, stating that the rule merely gives, quote, lip service, unquote, to constitutional due process. Here's what he said in part, in his opinion. Involuntary detention is a severe deprivation of individual liberty, far more egregious than other health safety measures, such as requiring mask wearing at certain venues. involuntary quarantine may have far-reaching consequences such as loss of income or employment and isolation from family. Judge added there is no scientific data or expert testimony to back up the rule, saying respondents offered no scientific data or expert testimony why Rule 2.13 was a necessary response to combat COVID-19, but instead contend only that it would provide a quick and nimble approach to combating the pandemic. Nevertheless, during oral argument of this matter, at a time when we hope that the worst of the pandemic is behind us, counsel for the respondents were unable to cite any instance where the procedure set forth was actually utilized. He noted that it is null and void until the New York State legislature acts otherwise. Yeah. This is going to keep happening, and judges are going to keep overturning some of this stuff. Whether it's firearms laws or draconian laws like that, it's going to keep happening. Why? Because they're unconstitutional. You can't just lock people up. You can't just take guns on a whim. You can't just make kids, it's ludicrous. So it looks like the Big 12 and the Pac-12 are not going to be partnering up, at least not just yet. Talks have officially ended. Basically, it boils down to a multitude of reasons, I said, but basically, it's different television rights. Their existing television rights end at different times. They couldn't agree on teams. Big 12 possibly wanted a full merger, which would mean every team in the Big 12. It would have diluted them, which I get. And because Big 12 media rights can't be negotiated until 2024, Pac-12 schools have no motivation to join the Big 12. The Pac-12 has announced that they're staying together and are in the middle of rights negotiations. Wow. So here's the prevailing thought. Look, adding in that the SEC allegedly has no current plans to expand and Notre Dame hasn't made any type of announcement, it makes me wonder what will happen next. I mean, one, I can't believe the SEC will stand pat. I can't believe that the ACC is going to let itself and its member schools fade out to oblivion, although they may have no choice. Then again, though, I'm not sure that the others, save for a few of the schools, have enough cachet to attract attention from the SEC or the Big 12. Again, also, what those two conferences look for seems appreciably different. The Big 10 would certainly listen to Texas, but no way would they have listened to Oklahoma joining. And while Gruesome Newsom thinks he will stop or at least delay UCLA coming to the Big Ten, the joke will be on him if the Big Ten ends up adding Stanford and leaves UCLA out, because that would mean two premier private schools leaving the state or leaving the conference, but they're in that state, and leaving the state schools behind. I mean, literally only an idiot like Gavin Newsom would see a quote-unquote victory in that. Another internet laughy from the Babylon Bee, the 12 most shocking revelations on Hunter Biden's laptop. One laugh. My favorite is number 8. Candy Crush app shows him only at level 6, but he's unlocked all the achievements on Barbie's magic hairstyler. And then number 9, he's paid for Norton for over 19 years, but he keeps forgetting to turn it on. Okay. I'm only going to 7 today, but I'm still taking a quick break. And then I'll come back with my rants and raves, et cetera, et cetera. Take a quick break. Be back in about 2 minutes. Be right back, folks. And we are back. I am Hank Jones, and you are back on Hank Jones Poly Sports on Global Patriot Radio. Find us at blogtalkradio.com. It is Wednesday, the 20th of July, 2022. If you want to call in, 319-527-6706. We're coming down to final at 7 o'clock, so may not have a lot of time, but I'm going to get a few rants and raves out of the way, or just rants, I guess, out of the way. Okay, so as part of the latest defense bill from Congress, they did a rather strange thing. As part of the bill, House Democrats want to take authority of the Washington, D.C. National Guard away from the president and instead give it to the mayor of D.C. Now, this is allegedly a response to the events of January 6, 2021. No telling where the amendment will end up in the Senate or in conference. Still, given that D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser all but receives her marching orders from the leader of the DNC, or more accurately, the most powerful Dem at the time, isn't this really just an end-around by the Dems to take control of the D.C. National Guard? I mean, look, National Guards are typically under the charge of state governors. District of Columbia, not being a state, doesn't fall into this category. But the real question is, how in hell do they equate what happened January 6, 2021 with failure on the part of the president? Who at that time, of course, was President Donald Trump. It's well documented that he offered the National Guard that day, actually in advance of that day. It's being swept under the rug that both Plastic Pelosi and Mayor Bowser refused National Guard troops, or even more local police to assist the Capitol Police. So why the need to completely shift? Why? Vito says a distraction, but why? Okay, let's go further. It appears that the Secret Service and Department of Homeland Security have deleted texts from January 6, 2021. Democrats on the January 6th kangaroo court have declined to comment. Somehow, though, per the White House, this is due to, quote, a device resetting, reshuffling, and reorganization. What? What are they doing, playing musical phones?
I forgot how to turn it on. Ugh.
Funny how we are just now hearing this. Funnier that Dems are not commenting. Gee, you think maybe, just maybe, there's some stuff on there that may either A, completely exonerate President Trump, or B, may further incriminate Pelosi, the Capitol Police, the mayor of the District of Columbia, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, next rant. Dopey Joe visited Israel. He made remarks at an East Jerusalem hospital during that stop. He broke out into a coughing fit. And then he explained it as, and this is really kind of pathetic, he explained it away as, excuse me, a terrible headache. He then takes a gulp of water, starts coughing again, and then he says, sorry, swallow was wrong. I'm not going to play. I could have uploaded it. I wasn't going to do that. Worse than that, I mean, first of all, what the hell? I mean, what in the hell? But worse than that, when he concludes the speech, he clearly didn't know who he was thanking. And then he did another one of these. This is a phrase Indy Hawk came up with in our group chat. He did another one of those airball handshakes where he, like, extends his hand to shake with someone, except there's absolutely no one there. Nobody there, as in airball. I mean, literally. And then he also made a major misspeak when he said, quote, to keep alive the truth and honor of the Holocaust. Now, he did correct himself and say horror. Gee, we're giving him points for that now. For a guy who is literally reading cue cards word for word, can we not give him bold type, large font, and maybe a couple of practice runs? Yeah, meanwhile, the White House, yeah, assuredly not Dopey Joe himself, who is really capable of little more than crapping his pants at this point. I'm serious. But the White House and the Department of the Treasury are hiding or refusing to acknowledge or provide what are called suspicious activity reports, a.k.a. SARs, that name Biden family members in overseas bank dealings that are possibly suspicious or illegal. It's a common thing. You can bet any time the Trump name came up. The latest reason, though, for not turning them over? Because Republicans are the only ones requesting them, not Democrats. Good God, has it gotten that bad? And has big media gone that much in the tank? I know. Last week I noted big media is seemingly not going all CYA for Dopey Joe. I get that. And I maintain that. Certainly not as much as they were. But it sure doesn't mean they are going out of their way. Why? Because especially going out of the way if it might lead to Barack Obama or someone on that playing field. And like I said, Dopey Joe, he went full Grandpa Walton when that guy asked him about the polls. Remember, the polls show 64% of Democrats don't want him to run for re-election. He said, read the polls, Jack. 92% said they'd vote for me. That wasn't the question. The question was, what did he think of 64% of Democrats that didn't want him to run for re-election? Second, that's not even what the poll said, at least exclusively. If you take it and put it in context, it said 92% of Dems would vote for him versus President Trump, which, as I said, given some of the other numbers, makes it a pretty suspect poll, which by nature of it being a New York Times poll, I guess makes it suspect by default. But literally, he comes like rushing at them. Full-on Grandpa Walton mode. I mean, the only thing missing were the bib overalls. Maybe a pitchfork, but I'm not sure Grandpa Walton. I think Grandpa Walton didn't carry a pitchfork. I think he just sat on the porch smoking pipe tobacco. Oh, my phone. Yeah, my friend Steve notes, we are not far from a dictatorship in this country via media. Absolutely right. You know, he went Grandpa. If you haven't seen it, see Joe Biden responding to poll question. He goes full on Grandpa Walton. Seriously, this isn't funny anymore. I know I laugh about it. I laugh about it with friends and family. I laugh about it here, but it's not funny anymore. It's actually kind of scary. I mean, between Dopey Joe and cackling Kamala, and then, of course, Taco Jill and Vodka Nancy, this is getting frightening. I already had zero hope for any kind of reasonable action on inflation and the economy, zero hope on a return to normal energy markets or damn near anything else. But I'm sorry, this really makes us look vulnerable, both from the outside and the inside. I, along with others, suspect that Barack Obama is kind of pulling the strings. How long before the guy takes unilateral action to regain control? I mean, whether it's the 25th Amendment or just a flat-out takeover, I mean, who and what would stop him? The House and Senate? Yeah, that's a laugh. The Department of Justice? Yeah, that's a heavy yikes on that. Supreme Court? Who knows there? But Obama wouldn't try it, probably, without the military. Now, given how things have gone there in the last year and a half, yeah, don't count on Admiral Leotards or General Pigtails to step up in any way, shape, or form. I can think of Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest when they are refused the opportunity to watch the World Series or just to watch the baseball game. He starts doing his own broadcast. One of the things he says is he uses the F word. I'm going to use it here, and I'm going to paraphrase him. What he would say now is, America's in big fucking trouble. And we are. I mean, you think about it. If Barack Obama is pulling the strings with a George Soros helping him or others – What's to stop him at this point? I mean, do you really think Joe Biden's going to get in his way? And Nancy Pelosi already, in a sense, wants him out. I'm sorry. It is really just scary. Okay, moving on. Okay, I'm sorry. AOC got arrested and handcuffed outside the Supreme Court yesterday. Just kidding. She wants us just to think that she got arrested and handcuffed. Okay, she probably did get arrested, but let me tell you, conservative media is going after her because, okay, she pretended that she walked with her arms folded behind her, pretending that she was handcuffed. It says she pretended to be in handcuffed when she was escorted away. And they said, one other person said, oh my gosh, faking handcuffs. And somebody else, the Capitol Police must have put invisible handcuffs on AOC. And another person said, AOC probably thinks that the big mean policeman wants to date her. And it said, note the handcuff pose, abandoned only to raise her fist in the air. That's the part I wanted to get at. Now, Indy Hawk's listening, so he could have been there. This is eerily reminiscent of the University of Iowa rallies on the Pentacrest back in 1982. If any Hawkeyes are listening and want to call in and tell me which building you were standing by, whether you were closest to Schaefer or McLean. Anyway, burning draft cards, mostly people who never even registered, I'm sure. But the taker of the cake that day, it went to this guy. First of all, I recognized him, and when I saw his picture on the front of the paper, this guy pretty much lived in the IMU game room. He came out long enough to burn his mock draft card because, as the paper pointed out, the Daily Iowan dutifully pointed out, he was only 17, so he didn't even have one. He burned a mock draft card. I'm sorry. He burned a mock draft card. And I remember picking up the Daily Iowan, and you know, pretty much that's the only thing you had to read as a student. I mean, you wouldn't pay for the town paper. And any place that Jeffrey Renander wanted to put the Campus Review, which was a conservative paper, almost any place would throw it out. People would get there and toss them. So you had the Daily Iowan. And it didn't have bad sports coverage. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. Seriously, I swear, AOC was birthed by some of the same people who used to get all up in arms and scream at Brother Jed back then. Brother Jed was this George Jed Smock. He was this college evangelist. He would just go around and evangelize on college campuses. He was, okay. Seriously, though, people would scream at the guy. I mean, just scream at the guy. And look, he wasn't what one would call a traditional, stereotypical evangelist. He would yell, you know, he would call people heathens and call girls whores and you're the whore of all that kind of stuff, the whore of Babylon. He would say that. But, I mean, it was a state university college town. But some of these people would go absolutely apeshit over a harmless, albeit bombastic and sometimes incendiary, inflammatory college evangelist. And they would be out there yelling. And one guy, I remember one time somebody threw an egg at him, and Brother Jed, to his credit, just kind of wiped it off on his pants and kept going. Anyway, no, AOC didn't actually get handcuffed, although, again, some may have thought so as she walked away with her hands folded behind her back. Yeah, she assured us, though, unwittingly, that she was not handcuffed when she raised her fist in the air to signify, or I shouldn't say, basically to virtue signal. Here's the thing. If this were Republicans after the Supreme Court failed to overturn Obamacare, or after the Supreme Court unilaterally legislated from the bench for gay marriage, AOC would be screaming about law and order, the lawmaking process, the sanctity of the Supreme Court. Oh, yeah, wait. Wait, the Republicans didn't march on the Supreme Court after those decisions. Yeah, my bad. Final thought, folks. Word is that Dr. Fauci plans to retire sometime next year before the end of Dopey Joe's first term. Don't believe it. Don't believe it. Sure, his work was done when he spent most of 2020 campaigning for Dopey Joe. And some of his latest revelations, his admitting the vaccines aren't very effective, word that the FBI has been investigating National Institutes of Health activity vis-a-vis the Wuhan labs, it's not all that flattering. But I'll tell you what, should the midterms not result in a shift of congressional power, don't think for a second that he would leave. First and foremost, the guy is still riding one of the world's longest, oldest gravy trains in existence. He is the highest paid government employee, and par for the course, he's the least valuable and possibly least effective. I mean, literally, the man quite literally may have done more to ruin our economy and energy industry and done more to lower trust in government and in the healthcare industry than almost anyone would have thought humanly possible 3 years ago. He has shown several things over the last 2.5 years. One, he's duplicitous. He responds to questions based on the network or the person asking them, and he bases his answers on what he thinks that party wants to hear. He's extremely political, although he claims not to be. He includes, you know, entering the campaign fray with overt support of one candidate over another. And again, given that he advocates for science, his choice had little to do with science, let alone health, especially the health of the DNC candidate. He's proven to be untrustworthy and deceitful. He has lied about necessary precautions. He has lied about possible effective treatments. He has lied about his role in the whole COVID mess. He simply isn't reliable as a government scientist, and I put that in quotes, whose job ostensibly is to look out for the health and safety of the American people, let alone the economic interests of this country versus the economic interests of other countries. And recently, the whole Paxlovid thing with his own COVID, something is not right there. So no, we should not rejoice in his announcement, at least not yet anyway. He still has time to do more damage, in time to inflict more self-serving corruption and, yes, ruin, destroy, or end more lives before his reign of terror ends. Unless and until he is actually gone, we are not well served by his presence in our government or in our healthcare apparatus or infrastructure. We simply aren't. So take his announcement with a grain of salt. Okay. Before I finish, the best internet laughy for today from the Babylon Bee. San Francisco DA announces innovative new plan to arrest people for breaking the law. Oh, okay, my final laughy for today, and unfortunately it's not that funny. Think about this, though. When Dopey Joe was a first-term senator, he could get gas for 39 cents gallon. Think about that. Think about that. Where we are now. I know, it's not a president. President does have an effect, though. Definitely has an effect. Okay, folks, that's it for me. I have run out of things to depress you. Some of it certainly depressed me. The sports stuff, though, not at all. Look for more from the Big 12, Pac-12, even though they say talks have officially ended. We'll start talking college football in earnest in a couple of weeks. Next week, I might celebrate my 60th birthday on air. My birthday's not until a couple days later, but you never know. Nothing's guaranteed, so I may have to celebrate it on air. We'll certainly talk more about World Track and Field Championships. And Gearhead Fred might drop around to talk more about some car stuff. So in the meantime, folks, have a great weekend. Have a good week. Be safe out there. Enjoy your summer. Kids, enjoy your summer vacation. I hope not kids are listening, at least not young kids. In the meantime, folks, have a great weekend. Have a great week. God bless. God bless America. Good night. Good night, folks.